Hello and welcome. You're listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Running on Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. In this episode, we're talking with candidates from District 3. We want you to join the conversation. You can call the air room with questions for candidates at 503-231-8187. You can message a question on the website, kboo.fm, and you can also email us questions at runningonair@kboo.org. Okay, so let's meet our candidates for today. We have here Brian Conley and John Sweeney. Let's just let you guys introduce yourselves. So I'll start over here with Brian.
My name's Brian Conley. It's conleyforpdx.com, and I've been living in Portland since 2011. I bought a home here 10 years ago. And I'm the father of a trans teen activist, and my wife works in addictions medicine and homeless health.
Nice, nice. And then over here with John.
I'm John Sweeney. I'm a native Oregonian, and I've spent most of my life here in Portland. In fact, I was with the Portland Parks and Recreation as a career, and I retired as a park supervisor, and I retired from the Oregon Army National Guard as a captain. And both of those I enjoyed most of the time. There are no perfect jobs, and I was on the Multnomah Education Service District Board for a couple of terms. So the United States is the best country in the world, and Western Oregon and Washington is the best of the best.
Nice. Thank you. Okay, so these first set of questions is kind of just to get to know you guys and, like, the role in this new government structure. So, like, what inspired you to run for office? We'll start over here with John.
Well, the thing is... I was with the city of Portland for 32 years, 8 months, and so this is the third turmoil, and so I want to be in to help make the transition. And the first one was Jimmy Carter got elected in 76 and became president in 77. So in 78, they went to the zero-based budget, and the zero-based budget modified, which turned the world upside down. In fact, just so obsessed with the budget. Then the other thing was Resolution A, which happened for Multnomah County and the cities in Multnomah County, is the fact that before that, Multnomah County was a full-service government. And then with Resolution A, they took over the jails and they took over the bridges because nobody wanted the bridges. And then they took over all the social services. So then the cities could concentrate on municipal services, but they had term limits, and so when the county commissioners became term limited out, they come to the city of Portland and they want to do the same thing. So now you have all of these people competing to solve the same problem, and so that the homeless program should be handled by the county and the city should do backup with zoning and some supply and property and stuff like that. Now, this is the third one, and a lot of people have always had a heartache against the commission form of government. And now we've had good governors and mayors and good parks commissioners, and so we're going to make this change, and unfortunately, it's going to be a little far out, and so I would like to have certain things happen, such as the meetings be out in the community centers rather than downtown. Like I just said about an hour ago, is that if you like to go downtown, there's something wrong with you because it's not fun going downtown. So I want to be there and use my experience to make things better because I always like to improve things. It's when I went through officer candidate school, it says the only foolish question is the question goes unasked. And as a ordnance officer with military hardware, the only foolish idea is the idea that goes unpresented. So we can make it better. And I've talked to Conley there, and he's a pretty sharp cookie too.
And jumping over here to Brian Conley, so what inspired you to actually run for office?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've spent my career working in conflict zones and failed and fragile states and helping people in kind of the worst times of their lives to work together to figure out how to, like, build up a new society, you know, whether that's setting up news agencies, training city council officials across Libya, working with parties that are struggling for free and democratic representation. And, you know, what I found in Portland is that this is the first time in 100 years that we'll have a we have the possibility of a truly democratic government. You know, there's a reason that we have the commission form of government, and that was explicitly to marginalize certain voices and kind of control who could get into power. That's changing. And so I think that, you know, no matter what happens on November 5th, I think Portland is on a better track. However, you know, we've had a long history in this city, just in the time I've been here, of electing candidates who either say, you know, tell a good story, and when it gets into it, they don't actually do those things, or when they get into office, it turns out that they don't know what they're doing or how to manage things. And, you know, the thing that's frustrating me the most is that candidates keep saying things like, we need more transparency, we need more accountability. And the reality is, there's a lot of publicly available information and data about what's going wrong and what's going right in the city. You just have to look for it. And so, you know, my position is that electing a journalist, you know, is a great idea for Portland, because you're electing somebody who has spent his career. I've spent my career, you know, doing research, teaching other people to do research, teaching them how to follow the money, how to like look at what's really possible, and take a realistic viewpoint, not just a viewpoint informed by your own like personal feelings or emotions.
Thank you. Okay, so this next question is specific to District 3, where you guys are running. What do you think are some of the most important issues facing District 3 right now? We'll start over here with John Sweeney.
Well, I think it's the roads, because the roads are really tore up, and I've talked to a lot of the bicyclists, and they're having a real rough time. And at one time, I had a 72 Honda coupe with 10-inch wheels, and I mean, chuck holes really make it tough. But anyway, I don't have that any longer. But anyway, it's really tough, we do have some of the problem with the homeless stuff that we need to take care of. But like I said, we get that with the county. But the thing is, it's mostly the roads are really, really pretty bad. And the fact that we do have a lack of a shortage of police officers. So getting around town, certain parts in the eastern part of the 3rd District is pretty tough, because the way people are driving is they're just driving wild and disobeying the laws and going extremely fast. In fact, in 2022, the last report, traffic deaths was over 46,000 people nationally. That's about 126 people a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. So it's hazardous to be out and about.
And then over here with Brian. So what do you think are some of the most important issues facing District 3 currently?
Yeah, well, so I think it's important to acknowledge that we have some really large sort of intransigent existential crises, right? Like around the unhoused, you know, we've got something like 38,000 people in the city who are marginally housed, right? And so when people are asking, well, if we've housed 5,000 people, why are there so many people still on the street? The fact is that like housing and houselessness is a transitional thing. It's not something that you are forever necessarily. You know, there are people who are housed today who might not be able to pay their rent at the end of the month, who might get evicted, and then they're going to be on the street, right? At the same time, I think there's been so much focus on housing and on substance use disorders and graffiti and things like this that we have lost sight of some of the simple, like, important things about being a city councilor, about being a government running a municipality. You know, for example, in Montevilla, where I live, they installed a pedestrian light, you know, for pedestrians trying to cross Stark at 80th. They did that back at the beginning of the year. However, no one ever connected the light to power, right? And so there was a pedestrian light there. Cars have a great indication that, like, okay, if there's pedestrians, I'll see the flashing light, I can slow down. And yet they didn't connect it. And for months, PBOT kept saying, well, we're waiting for PGE to connect the lines. That's not our job. That's what PGE has to do it. So on August 18th, you know, after 8-9 months of this, a pedestrian was finally struck in that crosswalk and taken to the hospital. And somehow, miraculously, 2 days later, that pedestrian light was activated, right? We cannot keep governing like this. We cannot have a system where we kind of muddle along and we do as best we can and we don't actually fix things until someone gets hit by a car, until, you know, fires, until the roads are totally beyond repair. We've got to focus on building up the needs of the local district. There's been a lot of talk about the Central City Plan and revitalizing Central City, and they gave us the Inner East Side, you know. But most of District 3 is outside of that area. And so the question that I have is, how do we make sure that we're investing in downtown, in Central City, in a way that is good for everyone and kind of trickles down, right? So one of the ways we could do that is, you know, revamping and expanding public transit from the east side into downtown, right? Because whether you're going to downtown or not, you know, if we put that trolley back on Sandy, you've got a long route that's going to take you. You can get into other places. If you are going to go to town, great. Now you have a way to get there more easily. But if you're not, you're still benefiting from that transit.
Thank you. Okay, so real quick, you guys are listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Today, we're speaking with candidates from District 3. I have here with me Brian Conley and John Sweeney. Join the conversation by calling in your questions to the air room at 503-231-8187. That number again is 503-231-8187. Or you can message us on KBOO website, kboo.fm. Okay, so jumping back into this, Portland is adopting a new form of government and a new electoral system this year, which presents a lot of opportunities and challenges. What do you think some of these opportunities are? What do you think some of these challenges are? We'll start over here with Brian Conley.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Corey. I think this is a really important question. I mean, first of all, it's probably clear from what I said earlier that I think, you know, this is a great opportunity for Portland's future. I think, you know, expanding the city government means that there's more voices at the table. Focusing it geographically means that, you know, every Portlander will have three city councilors who are, you know, responsible to them and accountable to them. I am a little bit concerned about how much service we'll be able to provide, given that we're, you know, currently going down from, I think the current city council has 3 to 4 staffers each. The plan at the moment is to have one. Commissioner Dan Ryans, I believe, is bringing forward an amendment during the budget monitoring process today to try and expand that a little bit. And then, you know, there's a lot of there's just going to be a lot of business to be done and a lot of like kind of figuring this out. And I really hope that, you know, whoever's in the council, that the voters will be patient. You know, we don't necessarily have the best track record with patience in Portland. And so we need to be aware of what is going well and how we're going to keep that going and make it even better. But it's going to take some time.
Thank you. And then John Sweeney over here. I can repeat the question if you need.
Well, I think one of the things that's going to be good with this, because we're from the districts, is the fact that we could be looking out for our people. So the fact that when they're talking about doing this or that for District 3, or say they're talking about do it for the city, says, well, what about District 3? Do we need some of that or more or less so that we can get a balance? Because, you know, they talk about one thing, cleaner air and congestion is, you know, we could squawk and get better public transportation, because usually they say you can't do this, but they don't provide a alternative. And I think with the number of people I've met running here, there's a lot of brain power, and if it's directed well, and I think a lot of them are well intended, that this is going to work out. You know, it always works out. It's just going to be different than the past system. And I think the fact that we'll be consulars and setting policy, which also means we'll be having our thumb on the budget process and make sure it works out good. And like I said, is that when they we get back to Resolution A, where we're not having all these people competing on in the same program. But I think it's going to work out because we have the brain power, and the thing is we'll be looking out for the people in our district, which was not necessarily what happened before. In fact, there was a guy that ran for office one time, and he had a map of Portland and a dime, and four of the commissioners lived in under the dime in Irvington, and the mayor lived in St. John's, and the auditor lived in Southwest or something like that. So we're going to get people out and about.
It's nice. Okay, so what specific steps are you taking now to make sure you are effective in office if you win? Brian.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been doing quite a lot. I have been, you know, reaching out to the neighborhood associations, going to, you know, every event that's available to talk to people, get to know the people in the district. I've also put forward a plan that during the first 90 days, I intend to meet with all 23 neighborhood associations from District 3 to say, okay, what's your number one issue? Like, tell me your top 3, 4, 5, what have you. But if you only get one, like, what is the number one thing you want to see change in the next 12 months or at most the 24 months? Because District 3 only gets 24-month term initially. Beyond that, I mean, you know, I've been going to city council meetings. I've been learning about the ordinances, learning about the dysfunction and really digging into what is possible and what the data shows so that we can cut through politicking and, you know, talk straight about what is really going on and why. You know, for example, there's been a lot of talk about how we can't get enough Portland police officers because nobody wants to work here. We need to pay more. We need to make it easier, this kind of thing. But if you look at the data, the Portland police hiring fell off long before 2020. In fact, it fell off in 2016, and ever since, they've only done background checks for about 30-40% of applicants. And I would say that the evidence suggests that that's at least partly due to the fact that the state of Oregon legalized marijuana and the city of Portland has done nothing to revise its approach to policing and its current prohibition on marijuana use, which says you cannot apply to be a police officer if you've consumed any kind of cannabis product in the last 12 months. And you can't even test for use in the last 12 months, you know, typically. So I don't know why that's a smart approach.
Thank you. Okay, so over here, John Sweeney, what specific steps are you taking now to make sure you're effective in office if you win?
Well, one thing I have is the fact that I've lived in the city a long time, and I've worked for the city, and I'm, you know, listening to all the different people out and about, and fellow candidates is quite an educational thing, just like Ryan was saying, and the fact that for police officers, doing background checks, and then the other choke point is the state police academy, because it's kind of like putting 55 gallons of water into a 5-gallon bucket. It just doesn't work. And my wife was a civilian employee with the Portland Police Bureau, and they would hire these officers, and then they would have them doing other things until they could actually go to the police academy. So she had one working for her for about 9 months before she actually got to go to the academy, and was just about discouraged as was going to quit. So if they said it'd be another 3 months, would have lost them. So, but the fact that this officer worked in the property and evidence was really good on taking care of the evidence, because there's a chain of custody, and my wife was involved in that, because so many times you have they lose a case for chain of custody, and actually they lost a couple of murder cases on account of that. So it's important to get the recruiting thing, and this is a fact of having the investigations for one, because at least they could get them on the payroll before they get them into the thing. And I also said in the last meeting, they need to have a reserve system so that you can have people when they say turn 21, they could join the reserve and they can kind of find out whether they like it. And also on the find out whether they not fit for the job. Because really, you know, you hear a lot of them, I want to get bad guys. What we need is people who want to help people. Because when you're in a position of power, you could help people and you could do wonders. You know, it's kind of like they could talk to these young people. You know, traffic record will influence your insurance rate, and it'll influence some of the jobs you can get. And so, plus the fact that you're more likely to kill somebody with your car than if you own a gun.
Okay, so we're going to switch topic here for real quick. The KBU News Department actually surveyed our listeners to find out what they think are the most important issues facing our city. At the top of that list was climate change. What impact do you think climate change is having here in Portland? And is this a priority of yours? We'll start over here with Brian.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I think, you know, I don't know how any thinking person can say that climate change is not having a major effect. Look at the weather, you know, in Portland. You know, how warm was it yesterday on a Tuesday in October, right? And it was, I mean, the weather's been beautiful, but, you know, that not for long term, right? I mean, I grew up in Florida, and I remember we used to be able to set our watch every summer by the rain. You know, between 3:30 and 4:30, there was going to be rain every day, and that doesn't happen anymore. And there's a lot of things like that, and it's time that we, you know, pay attention, figure out what we can do to, you know, make PSEF even more effective. You know, the Portland Clean Energy Fund, and also what we can do to ensure that, you know, we've got this Portland Climate Action Work or Portland Climate Emergency Work Plan, and it's just not getting done, you know. And like, it's great to have a work plan, but if you're not implementing it, if you're not able to meet your metrics, if you're not taking a hard look at why and really making it a priority to change that, we're not going to make progress, and we don't have time to waste.
Okay, and then over here to John Sweeney. What impacts do you think climate change is having here in Portland, and is it a priority of yours?
Well, there's some climate change at work along, and the priority is, and my background with equipment as an operator and in the military, and a little bit of history. In 1973, there was the gas, you know, oil shortage, and in Brazil, São Paulo, Brazil, had the dirtiest air of any industrial city. And so what they did, if you buy a Brazilian car in Brazil, it runs on E100, straight alcohol. And the fact that government agencies and a lot of people are having vehicles that are made since 2005, starting in there, and they're on flex fuel. And that's the fact that I'd like to see all the government agencies go to use an E85 gas. In fact, the state pickup was driving around and it says powered by E85 gas because it was flex fuel, and they could do that. And then the other thing that they did with the thing, they found out that standard gasoline engine can run on almost 25% alcohol. So in Brazil, their gasohol is not 10 E10, it's E20. So in about 6 months' time, São Paulo, Brazil, went from one of the dirtiest airs to one of the cleanest, and that would be the process on that. And then the fact that they take the biodiesel and run it up to B20, and in fact that the city vehicles would have them run on this renewable diesel, because the renewable diesel could be used on all diesels. And so that's the thing. And the other thing is to influence the I-5 bridge, the replacement, to be a passover. In other words, no up and down, because they were talking about, first they were going to have the bridge where it was just a drive-through. Then they changed, well, that's too much money, so we're going to have an up and down bridge. Well, you're going to have people stopping on a Minnesota freeway, which is going to affect the people in District 2 a lot, but it will affect it will affect everybody. So we could influence them and says, you're going to build that new bridge, and it's going to be a passover, no stopping. If you look at the 205, I mean, They just drive. They might slow down, but they don't stop.
Okay. So what will your position be on continued fossil fuel infrastructure here in Portland? Brian?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've gotta make some practical changes, and we've gotta, you know, be willing to you know, make some sacrifices, right? So right now, something like 90% of the, you know, liquid fuel in the entire state is stored at the the Critical Energy Infrastructure Hub up in Northwest, and that's District 4 in the Linton neighborhood. And at the same time, you know, to get the fuel there, it goes right through the Brooklyn neighborhood, you know, up the train tracks, and they're carrying like massive fuels. Like if there was an accident, you know, the entire neighborhood would be wiped out. And so we need to be a little bit more discerning about where we're placing these fuels, about how we're using these fuels. We definitely need to be moving towards less dependence. I know some candidates are talking about how, well, you know, the electrical energy, if we put all the buses on electricity, they're still being powered by fossil fuels, by dirty fuels. The fact is that, you know, those electric batteries are more efficient, and so you might still be contributing some, but it should be contributing less. And that's the thing we need to do initially, is wherever we can cut down, wherever we can reduce, we need to do that. We need to start the process today, because we're not going to move the CEI hub overnight. We're not going to change the Zenith energy situation overnight. So we've got to get started now.
Okay. And over here to John Sweeney real quick before we take our break.
Okay. Well, the thing is that what I think they could do is they could look at that energy hub and say, okay, let's take a look at your tanks and upgrade your tanks. Because it used to be in your gas station around town used to have steel tanks. And then they went to plastic tanks, which are more resistant to leakage. So that would be the thing to do, is the fact that is that they look at each one of those tanks and then start replacing them in spot, because you just can't move them anywhere. And is fortunately, we get most of our electricity off hydropower, which is one of the cleanest forms, and so luckily we're lucky that way. But the thing is that people should work for getting themselves more efficient vehicles and stuff like that. And really, the most practical way is for a flex fuel hybrid, because you have cleaner fuel plus the fact that you still have long range.
Thank you. Okay, and we will be right back in a moment, folks. Hello, and welcome back, folks. Okay, so support for Running On Air comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland's website, lwvpdx.org. The League has videos of candidate interviews and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions and explanations of ballot measures. That's lwvpdx.org. Okay, so you're listening to Running On Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Today we're speaking with candidates from District 3. I'm here with Brian Conley and John Sweeney. Join the conversation by calling in your questions to the airroom at 503-231-8187. That number again is 503-231-8187. Or by messaging us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. Okay, so jumping right back into this conversation, another big issue on our survey was affordability of living in Portland. And this has to do mainly with housing, but it also includes so many other aspects of our day-to-day life that have gotten more expensive. What would you like to see Portland do about this? And we'll start over here with Brian.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of talk about affordable housing, and I think, you know, candidates and certainly constituents probably don't realize that when you talk about, you know, quote, affordable housing, unquote, that's really a code for low-income housing. It's kind of like the new terminology. And we do need more affordable housing, but we also need a lot more housing that is simply affordable. We have a variety of things that we can do. I mean, first of all, we absolutely need to do whatever we can to incentivize and accelerate building. The city of Austin, you know, they just noted, you know, a huge shift in cost of living that they've attributed to their, like, you know, massive building in the recent years. You know, we have something like 14,000 vacant properties in Portland. Now, that means that they may be going through renovations, maybe going through repairs, they may be off the market. But that's a lot of units that are not currently housing Portlanders. And so I think, you know, I would like to see the city councilors from all districts, you know, maybe we set up a committee, work together to understand that. You know, I think the rents are too damn high for what people can afford. And so, you know, there's a multi-pronged approach to that, right? On the one hand, we can go talk to developers and landlords and say, look, these are your prices. You know, you're not housing people. People are not taking you up. What can we do to lower the rents, right? And if landlords say, well, we can't lower the rents, then we have to say, okay, well, what can you do? What will you do to support and advocate for more supportive housing services in the form of rental assistance so that the cost to the individual renter is less and is more manageable? And thirdly, you've got the final stick. If that doesn't work, you know, under the current housing emergency, the mayor has the right to impose rent control above the 10% limit that's set by the state. You know, the state sets rent control. It can't go above 10% at most, they could do it less. During an emergency, the city can override the state priority and can, you know, impose higher rent control. Do I think that's the answer? No, certainly not by itself. And what I do think, though, is that we need to get ready to make some hard choices. We need to come together as a city. You know, we're all depending on Portland working better. We all benefit when more Portlanders are housed. You know, rather than depending on these one-time permitting fees and system development charges, we should be looking at getting more people into homes. That's going to create property tax revenue and other ongoing sources of revenue. And that's more important than getting a one-time fee, especially if that one-time fee is preventing building from happening.
Okay. And then sliding over here to John Sweeney, affordability in Portland. What would you like to see done about it?
Well, it needs to streamline the permitting process because about 40% of the cost of building a new structure of some sort is involved in paperwork. It's surprising when you find out when you just go through the paperwork. Sometimes the paperwork could be $150,000 and they haven't turned a spoonful of dirt. And so this is the thing, is to streamline that process. It was streamlined at one time, but it needs to get back to it because it's kind of like you got something going and they keep adding on and they don't add into or streamline. And so when you could get more housing, you have more competition and then the rents go down. Because there was a time when rents got kind of high in Portland, then they had a building boom, and then all of a sudden people were able to go to their landlord and says, well, I can move to such and such for so much less money, say $200-$300 in a month, and they would turn around and they would drop the payment, say $150 or $200, because to keep that person there, because vacancies is a bad deal. Because if you look around, there's a lot of new apartments, but they're empty because they have stratosphere pricing on them. But that is the thing, is that to get the more housing and basically simpler housing, because then it would be more reasonable.
Okay, and so this next question is more or less centered around homelessness, not housing. So what do you all think about expanding Portland Street Response? I know this has been like a tough subject for a while. We'll start over here with Brian.
Yeah, so I mean, I've said all along in the campaign that I think we need to expand Portland Street Response. you know, 2 years ago when they first started talking about it, or maybe even longer, it was brought up that, you know, Medicaid should be able to cover a portion of that cost, but there are certain limitations and expectations. And in order to have that funding, you know, PSR needs to be fully staffed. It needs to be a 24/7 program. And, you know, people are saying, well, it's too expensive, it's not effective, so we should cut it. And in fact, the opposite is true, that if you expand the services, it will cost less and do more. And that's absolutely essential right now. You know, we're going into a budget crisis, as everyone keeps saying. But there are a lot of opportunities, if we think creatively, to find, you know, support from the federal government, support from state funding, look at other opportunities. We absolutely need to keep Portland Street Response. We do need to figure out how to, what revisions we can make that'll make it more effective. You know, I think it being looked at as a program only for the unhoused, you know, maybe that's the right place for that. But we also need, what can we say, like de-escalation training, right? We need like additional supports to reduce the burden on, you know, sworn officers in the Portland Police Bureau. And we need to be sending the right people to the right problems.
Okay, thank you. And then over here to John Sweeney, what do you think about expanding Portland Street Response?
Well, I think they need a little more expansion, but also we need to find a place for the people to move to. And of course, with some of the people, they don't want to move into some of these places because there's too many rules. You know, you can't do this and you can't do that, and such as it might be the fact that it's a father that has children and daughters, and they split them up, or it's a woman that has sons and they split them up, and they say, well, we're family oriented. Not true. And the thing is that one of the things is there's about 60 empty buildings downtown. Now, if you look at those buildings, they have some facilities for parking, but they have garbage disposal. They have a restaurant there that can provide a couple meals a day. Most of the new buildings, the interior walls are movable or removable, and each floor has drinking fountains and restrooms, and so you could expand that to have showers and laundry facilities and stuff on each level, and actually have an interior camping ground. So the people could set up their tents, and you have a 20 by 20 square for their tents and their stuff, and that would give them a back to a daytime lifestyle, because most of them, they figure it's too dangerous to sleep at night, so they're roaming the streets, and idle hands is the devil's mischief. But the thing is, it would also give them a permanent residence, at least temporarily, because that's been the thing that could stabilize them. And say they're at 1120 Southwest 6, and space 624, which means sixth floor, space 24, and the fact that if you look at the buildings, it could easily probably house about 100 people per floor. So 10 floors is 1,000, 20 floors is 2,000. But then that gets to them a chance for a normal lifestyle, so to speak, even though, say, they're still in tents, but it's out of the weather. And they would be able to have their lifestyle, be able to have a address for their licensing and insurance and communications with family and friends, and also to receive responses to job applications.
Cool. Thank you. Okay. And for those listening at home, you're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Today, we're speaking with candidates from District 3. I'm here with Brian Conley and John Sweeney. Join the conversation by calling in your questions to the Air Room at 503-231-8187. That number again is 503-231-8187. Or by messaging us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. Okay, so...
Can I say one more thing
on
that last question? So I think, you know, when we talk about the unhoused and how we're going to, you know, solve this problem and how we're going to work together, we need to have some really honest conversations about costs and about our values, where we want to put that money and why, right? So, you know, there some estimates say that we need 3,000 to 4,000 more shelter beds in Portland to shelter everybody. If you want to talk about the numbers, if that's 4,000 people, you need probably, you know, it could be as many as 53 sites, right? So you're going to have to locate 53 new shelter sites. Shelter sites are extremely hard to locate currently. And then, you know, you're going to have the cost. So the cost just to locate and retrofit those sites is easily going to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And then you have ongoing costs of $20,000 to $70,000 per person in support services, right? So you're talking about $80 million to $270 million a year. On the other hand, you know, there's the Urban Alchemy model where they're currently housing people for around $100 a day. So let's assume they could expand that program to cover 4,000 people. Now you're talking about $400,000 a day, right? Every day you're spending the cost of a small family home, right? And that may be what we have to do. But when we're talking about the houseless problem or the challenges of the unhoused community, we have to be realistic about what these numbers look like and what these choices mean.
And on that topic, so homelessness and the addiction crisis in Portland, they're pretty intertwined. A lot of people try and say the drugs are leading to the homeless crisis, but it's actually falling into homelessness that tends to fall into addiction crisis.
Absolutely.
So how do you think the new city council should approach these issues? We'll start over here with John Sweeney.
Well, it'd be the case that I think the homelessness would lead to the addiction because it could be alcohol, it could be drugs of some sort because you start having the alcohol or the drugs is a relief from the pain because, you know, it's, a lot of times some of these people they're out of work and out of their place to live through no fault of their own. You know, this is the difference between getting fired from a job because you did something wrong and getting laid off because business is bad or some sort of thing like that. So it's a fact that we got to provide them some hope, and that's what makes a difference. So this is the thing: if you have the some sort of housing, and the fact that there's say you have like a community where they feel like they belong to the community, and then you have ways where they make connections to get jobs, and like I said, is it the communications with their family and friends, because some of them might have left their home in Stockton or Olympia or something like that because they're out of work and they were just down in their luck and they're just embarrassed to be around their family and friends. So this would get them stabilized and then get themselves reconnected and so that they would feel that they have some worth, and then the fact that they can get themselves connected so they can get back into the workforce and start climbing out of the hole.
Nice, thank you. And over here to Brian, homelessness and addiction, how should the new city council approach it?
Yeah, well, so, you know, my wife has worked in addictions medicine and homeless health since 2011. And so, you know, through her work, I've come to know a lot of behavioral health experts and people who are working on the front lines of you know, housing and homelessness and addictions, frankly. And first and foremost, like, I can tell you what doesn't work. Criminalizing homelessness, criminalizing substance use disorders don't work. And here's the number one reason they don't work. It's not like we are locking people up in the jail. We're not taking them off the street and, like, throwing them in a hole and, you know, leaving them there so now they're no longer visible on the street, right? What's happening is we're arresting them for homelessness. We're sending them to the county jail. Within 4 hours, they're back on the street in a new place that wasn't where they were living without any of their stuff, you know, without any jobs, without any opportunity, right? And the same thing with people with addictions, right? Like, we don't have enough treatment facilities Oregon is last in the country for substance use treatment. That has got to change. One of the best tools that probably exists to do that is something called a BASO, which is a Behavioral Health Administrative Services Organization. And so what that does is that would create an entity that we would have to have as a tri-county across Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington to work together to coordinate at the tri-county level the approach to this issue. And frankly, like, we need patients, we need candidates and politicians who are telling us the truth and talking about what they're going to do. You know, right now you can like complain about it. You can say, oh, we're wasting all this money. But if you don't have an alternative, it's irresponsible to simply denigrate the services that we do have currently. Whether they're as effective as we'd like them to be or not, they are what we have, and we cannot afford to lose that.
Thank you. Okay, and so we actually have a listener question. Mary asks, what do you think about the role of Airbnb in the city's housing woes? Would you consider more regulation on Airbnbs? We'll start over here with Brian.
You know, I'll say this, like, I don't feel educated enough to say for sure whether more regulation is plausible or is the right way to go. You know, fortunately, being in city government is not like being on a talk show. You know, we have time to like do the research, look at the ordinance, look what the experts say. I do think that so long as we have, you know, 14,000 units that are, you know, vacant some or much of the year, that suggests to me that Airbnb is definitely having an impact on the market. I think, you know, also we can't leave out the impact of RealPage, which is a sort of landlord service that uses algorithms and has been accused by the Department of Justice of price fixing. And so we definitely need to be looking at what we can do to prevent that in Portland.
Okay. And then over here to John Sweeney. Do you need me to repeat the question?
Yes. The Airbnb, there was just an article in the paper that talked about the fact that so many of them are basically, they're not registered. In short, they're working off the grid, and of course, that's a problem. Are they meeting health and safety standards? And the fact that they should be on the books so that you know that they're there, and possibly the fact is that maybe the deal is they could be utilized for some of the houseless people for temporarily. But the thing is that if you're running a business in Portland, you should be registered so that people have a track of what's going on.
Okay, and this next set of questions is more personalized to each of you guys. So we'll start with John Sweeney. You've run for office a few other times, actually. What draws you to this city council race specifically?
Well, yeah, it's true. In fact, the first time I ran for office was in '68, and I ran for mayor. And
was that Portland?
In Portland, yes. And things were good. And then Lyndon Johnson said he was not going to accept and run. And it from late March, it drowned out everything. In fact, I'm surprised right now that the presidential race isn't drowning out things right now. Now, the thing is that one of the things I brought up was the 17th and Powell. So the fact is that now it's you have an underpass and the trains don't block traffic every morning and every night. So I did gain that part. And I talked to him and says it should be an overpass because you could prefab it in 90 days. No, they did the underpass, which took them 18 months. So a lot of times when I've run, I've actually got some results that benefit me personally, but the fact that the 17th and Powell benefits a lot of people. And then the fact is that the auditor died in 70, and so I run for auditor in the fall, and in 70, so I says I wanted to have the city candidates in the voters' pamphlet. So starting 1972, the city candidates were in the voters' pamphlet. So before 1972, city candidates were not in the voters' pamphlet. And a lot of people get there and says, oh, when they got their ballots, oh, the mayor and the auditor and the commissioners are up for grabs. But they didn't know that. You know, the county commission people were in, and and stuff like that. So I gained that part. And so one of the times I ran in supervisors were driving around, city supervisors in full-size cars. I says, you know, you can go to an intermediate-sized car. It'll still haul six people if you need it. But normally, there's a haul of one person. It'll cost you $500 less per car, and you're going to gain 3 to 5 miles a gallon. And next thing you know, the next batch of cars they bought, instead of being Galaxies or something, they were Fairlines. And so had that kind of a gain. And so there's been more than one time when I've actually got something going, and the same with...
And that's what you're hoping to do with this race, is
right,
to get something going?
Right, at least to get an idea out there, and several ideas. And so, you know, I feel that my running may not benefit me personally. I did win the election of the... Multnomah County, Multnomah Education Service District, but the fact is getting there and having some of these things take place that has benefited people in general. So that has been the rewarding part. So
thank you. Okay, and then we'll jump right over here to Brian real quick. So you have a master's degree in nonprofit management and also have covered some of the most tense conflicts around the world as a journalist and educator. How would you apply those experiences towards the city council and the crises we are seeing on our streets?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, the number one thing I can say is that I'm alive here today because of my ability to negotiate with local groups, because of my ability to kind of look at the situation, make the connections that are necessary to like solve problems and really like see programs through. Currently, I'm helping run a news agency in Afghanistan that's a majority female reporters. I'm a mentor. I'm sort of training and supporting them. And they have a million, you know, readers in Afghanistan. In 2019, I created a guide for city councils all across Libya about how to engage with their constituents, what's the role of a city councilor, and how they can, like, work with the media and work with the press.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So, real quick, where can people find more information on your campaigns, John?
Well, also on page M80 of the voters pamphlet, at the bottom I said, any questions, you got my email, jsweeney88@gmail.com, or my phone is 503-230-0863.
Cool. And Brian?
Yeah, you can find me at conleyforpdx.com. It's the same thing. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And then, of course, please read the voters pamphlet.
Cool. Thank you, guys. Okay. So you've been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with candidates for District 3, Brian Connolly and John Sweeney. You can find all of the episodes of Running on Air on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to all the KBOO volunteers who helped to make this happen. Our engineer and producer is Althea Billings, and our editor is Eric Loschner. Tune in to the next episode of Running on Air. It will be with candidates from District 4 at 9 a.m. tomorrow. I've been your host, Corey Ilya. Thank you for listening.